Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from Squatters Beach here in Martha's Vineyard, where the not-so-elite meet.
It wasn't easy to get in here, I'll tell you.
Like everyone else here, my brother and I were unable to use our considerable fame and influence to get even the smallest glimpse of the president and his family. So we're going to camp out here in Squatters Beach and wait until the next ferry to the mainland.
Hey, I think that's ex-Governor Dukakis over there. Hey, Mike!
That's not Dukakis, you knucklehead. He's over there. Can't you see him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The guy in the green Speedo bathing suit.
Yeah, in the tank, right? Speaking of all wet, got any mail this week?
You know, the mail has been... it's a desperate situation.
An all-time low?
And an all-time
And it's nadir?
And you might say that. And it's low point as well. This is interesting. I don't know if I should even mention Vivian Margolis, PhD's name.
No, I don't think
from
so.
From Columbia, Maryland, but says, dear Click and Clack, I'm an old, old woman. How about sending me an extra, extra large t-shirt to be buried in? It would mean a lot to me. My husband is 88, and he says, I wouldn't be caught dead in one of those damn fool things. Some people have no taste. Thanks in advance. Vivian. Well,
it's on the way.
It's on the way. It's an interesting idea, isn't it?
It is?
I mean, most people get buried in just like suits.
That's what you think.
Well, I mean, it isn't
right.
No.
You
think that the Undertakers are stealing the suit?
Well, you ever go to...
Lou's clothing store in the back?
Exactly.
Combination. That's why.
I mean, they lay that baby
Johnson's
up.
Funeral
what are you
Parlor
doing?
And secondhand clothing.
Somebody dies. What do? You go out and buy him a new suit. He ain't going to need a new suit. I mean, why get buried in a new suit? These Undertakers must look at these new suits and say, can you believe this, Frank? They're going to bury this guy in a $500 Brooks Brothers suit.
No.
No, they're not.
Oh, no, they're not.
Oh, no. Blue jeans and a sweatshirt.
So that's the ideal combination of business. Used. It's not used. I mean, it's hardly used.
Hardly used, right. Right. Huh? Wasn't even sat in. If you want to call us about your car, our number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Don't tell us. Just tell us where you're from, and we'll tell you if it's Kathy with a C or Kathy with a K. Where are you from?
I grew up around Cleveland, Ohio, but I now live in Nevada, Missouri.
Oh, it's with a K.
Wrong.
I don't think so.
No, of course, that's just wrong.
Well, you
you're
just
a real rocket
right
scientist
in.
To say, I don't think so.
Well, you just jumped right in. Look what I wrote. What have I got there? Is that a C or a K?
Cleveland, it says.
Cleveland.
All right, Kathy, what's up?
Well, on your recommendation, last March, I bought a Mercury Sable.
Uh-huh.
Well, must have been my brother's recommendation.
Whatever. But my problem is not with the Sable, really. Before that, I drove an 82 Buick LeSabre.
Yeah.
And every time I would get in the car, before I would turn on the ignition, I would step on the accelerator pedal.
Yeah.
And when I took my test drive in my Sable, I did this, and the salesman said, don't do that. And I want to know why and what happens if I do.
Well, you had to do it in your 82 LeSabre because that was carbureted.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to do that in order to set the choke.
That's old technology, however, right. Kathy.
Right, I know that.
You needn't do it on the Sable, but it certainly wouldn't hurt anything. I mean, it's not like, oh, my God, you're going to ruin the engine.
Okay.
It's just unnecessary, and it is counterintuitive. I mean, you think that when you get into the car, you must do something with the gas pedal because we've been conditioned to do that with the gas pedal for years and years. You get in, you pump the gas, you roll the window down.
Well, you old guys have been conditioned. Us new drivers, I mean, since I've been driving, that's been fuel injection.
What's that, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
2 weeks, right. So I don't know what his words were. If he said, don't do that, what he should have said is, you needn't do that.
Okay. So I'm not really hurting it if I do.
You're not hurting it, but you're not making it start either.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, if what you've been doing is stepping on the gas pedal once and then letting go of it and then turning the key.
Right.
Then you've done nothing. And if you feel better doing that, Kathy, keep doing it.
Okay.
But do not put the gas pedal to the floor and hold it there.
Okay,
while you turn the
I've
key.
Kind of broken myself of the habit, but then I went home this summer and was driving the LeSabre again and had to do it again.
Yeah.
So So boy. Now I'm kind of back in the habit.
Well, you know, I kind of, it's kind of a tradition.
It is.
Not a habit. And I think that it's unconscionable for the automakers to deprive us of one of our national traditions. It's like throwing out the first ball. If you want to step on the gas pedal, Kathy, you go ahead and do it.
I mean, that was the very first thing that my father taught me when he taught me to drive.
Sure.
Right, and I don't think that those traditions should be lightly tossed aside.
And there are several generations of people who are driving cars now who feel that this is important. Also, it makes you feel like you're doing something, like you have some control over whether the car starts or not. I mean, turning the key, any idiot can do that. I do.
I guess so, yeah.
But stepping on the gas pedal just the right way. I mean, there was a whole history. People knew how to step on the gas pedal in their cars so that the car would start.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
so
gone.
So I think you should continue this tradition and, more importantly, pass it on to your progeny.
Okay.
See you, Kathy.
Thank you very much.
That's been called. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, fellas.
Hi, who's this?
This is Clayton in Eau Claire. How are you both doing?
Where's Eau Claire? Wisconsin?
Eau Claire is in Wisconsin. It's a suburb of Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, yeah.
About 100 miles east.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a question for you that falls under the category of premarital intrigue and woe.
Let me write this down. Premarital intrigue. Wow.
We're ready.
And woe. Not woe and intrigue, but
no,
premarital intrigue and woe.
Yeah. Whoa.
Whoa. All right.
Okay.
Go.
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
My gas gauge is unreliable, and my mileage is variable.
Yes.
So, I've run out of gas once or twice in the last year. I have an old Jetta.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a gas can to fill it up. Mm. And when I got to the station and filled up the car's tank, I thought, I'll fill the can as well.
Yes. And carry the can around.
Yes, I carry the can around in the trunk, and it's come in handy once or twice when I've miscalculated.
Sure. Mm.
My charming and beautiful fiancée, Debbie, has told me that if I carry a full can in the trunk, I'm not playing with a full deck of cards.
And she will never ride with you again.
What I want to know is, which is more dangerous? A full can of gas in the trunk, a half full can of gas in the trunk, or an empty gas can?
Or a pedestrian on the highway.
That's another possibility.
Yeah. I mean, that's the trade-off, isn't it? I mean, if you run out of gas on the highway, would you rather be walking along the highway in the dead of night, or would you rather take your chances with the explosion?
Gee.
That's a good question.
It is, and you thought of it, and I like it.
Well, there is a fourth choice here. I mean, you could fix the gas gauge.
Huh? I never thought of that.
The question is not even so much whether I should fix the gas gauge as how dangerous is it, if at all, to carry a full spare can of gas in the trunk?
Yeah, that's
geez,
that's,
I think it's dangerous.
I don't. The gas can is probably not much more dangerous than the gas tank.
But the gas can, there are other dangers involved, Piston Puss. Number one, the gas can is free to float around. So if you were to have an accident, for example, the gas can
not necessarily
travel throughout the trunk, bing, bang, boom, 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 ricochet off sharp objects, which could pierce the can, cause a spark, explode the can,
whoa, the contents, and you. Wait a minute. Clayton has got this gas can ensconced between three
That's
sandbags.
Right. I have it very carefully packed inside all those things I've been meaning to take to the Salvation Army.
Exactly. So that thing is more protected than the gas tank.
All right. Now, here's also his...
All right. Go ahead.
Now,
do
you allow this can to vent?
Yeah.
Right? And where is it vent into?
That is the problem. That's the problem that I tried to sidestep.
I mean, you cannot seal the tank up, because if you do and allow nothing to escape, the tank can explode. The gas can, rather. Or your tank. I mean, tanks are vented.
Okay.
So, but your gas can, if it is vented, it's allowing harmful fumes to enter the passenger
compartment.
Enter
the vehicle. That is the problem, isn't it?
That's dangerous, and it'll eventually do brain damage, and it'll cause you to do things like call up talk shows about cars and ask stupid questions.
But I mean, with all due respect, people have been carrying spare gallons of gasoline in their trunks since time immemorial. So. How dangerous can it be?
No, it is not. It's like anything else. It's like Russian roulette. It's not dangerous to do it once in a while because the fumes aren't going to kill you. After all, the guys that pump gas are not all blithering.
Oh,
okay,
no,
never mind.
No,
let's start a different tack. So So it's possible that if you do it once in a while, you know, the luck is that something won't happen. But if you do it regularly, sooner or later you're going to park in the hot sun and the can's going to explode or it's going to spew gasoline all over the place. Sooner or later you're going to have a serious accident.
So you're on Debbie's side, is that right?
I'm on Debbie's side. Yeah, and I think you should get the thing fixed, Clayton.
Well, I mean, I was trying to be devil's advocate, but I guess I have to relent here.
All right, so I should leave the can back at home in the garage next to the lawnmower.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you should take an empty can with you.
And you know what to put in place of the can of gas? You're going to have a lot of space now.
Please tell me.
A fold-up bicycle.
Now, that's a good
Isn't
idea.
Isn't that a good idea? That way, when you run out of gas, you hop on the bike and you say, Deb, I'll be back in an hour. And Uncle back. I mean, I wonder how Debbie would change her opinion of all of this were she to be in the car when you ran out of gas. And if the two of you had to now schlep the 20 or 30 miles to the nearest gas station. Start hoofing it and see what Debbie says on the walk to the gas station.
Oh, that's kind of mean.
Well, it's easy. It's easy to have opinions about things if you are not personally affected by them.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think I've come up with my own answer to this.
I think okay. You have too.
Whatever it is, I don't want to know it.
See you, Clayton.
Good luck, Clayton.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, talk about something mean. I have in front of me here.
What?
A beautiful photograph of none other than a 1965 Rambler Ambassador.
They made an Ambassador in 65? I didn't know that.
Yeah, black one, too.
Black?
And look how sleek it is and beautiful. Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's very nice.
Well, you could say that was sleek and black and beautiful.
I couldn't say
no,
that.
No, you can't. But you, I could say that. This is a sleek black beauty.
You could say that.
Boy, a man would be proud to own a car like this, wouldn't he? Boy, you'd be proud, wouldn't you?
I thought you loved me.
Gee, wouldn't
I'm
you
your
be,
brother.
Wouldn't you be proud?
You say you love me and you're that cruel to me? You know I can't discuss this vehicle any longer.
I know. If we have a pact.
We have a pact.
Yes. But it's too bad.
And what a...
Too bad you lost that bet, huh? Well, boy, I'm telling you, that is... But I will keep this here, and I'll refer to it from time to time during the show.
I will never maybe forgive every, Patty every from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hey, we've got more calls on the Puzzler Answer coming up right after this. This message comes from NPR sponsor eBay Motors. It doesn't matter if your car is brand new or a vintage rumbler. There's always room to make improvements to take it to the next level and make it feel a little more like you. But how do you know where to go to find the right parts to do that? Well, eBay Motors has all the right parts at the right prices. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means they have 122 million parts all at your disposal. So whatever you want to do to your car, you'll be able to find exactly what you need at ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
Hey, well, listen. You know, as most of our listeners know, the Puzzler is on vacation.
Well, I'll say it's on vacation. Go ahead. Tell them where the Puzzler is. Is it with Jennifer?
Well, coincidentally, the Puzzler had the good fortune to be booked into a room here on Martha's Vineyard for the same time that the president and his family are here vacationing.
You'd think that that Puzzler would have the courtesy. I mean, there's mosquitoes here on Squatters Beach. They're eating me alive.
Whoa, ouch!
You think they have the courtesy to let us share the room?
Well, it was my brother's notorious reputation for snoring.
Yeah, it did precede me once again.
Yeah, that just kept us here on the beach with the rest of the unguaranteed reservation holders. And anyway, the Puzzler will return like it always does. Like the swallows to Capistrano.
Yeah.
Like the mosquitoes to Squatters Beach.
But when will it return?
At the end of the summer.
Isn't this the end of the summer?
Well, it's...
Boy.
As the Duke would say, close on to.
Close on to.
It's close on to the end of the summer.
It's very sad.
In the meantime, if you have a puzzle that you think we can use, we'd love to see it because...
We need puzzlers.
Yeah, so don't send any puzzles about the liars and the truth tellers with the fork in the road. We have 400 copies of that. What other puzzler don't we need any more of?
We don't want any of the puzzlers that say there are four houses. One is red, one is green, one is blue, one is yellow.
Because we don't know how to figure those out.
And one guy's an engineer and one guy's a lawyer. We don't need that. No.
Right. No. So if you don't have anything like that, send them along. We'd love to see them, hear them, read them, or whatever. And the address is Puzzler Tower. Not as lousy as usual, Puzzler Division. You can abbreviate that as NOLAUPD. Box 3500, Harvard Square.
Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Ma-02238. And if we happen to use your puzzler in the fall and you catch us at it, we'll send you a Car Talk t-shirt or something like a Car Talk baseball hat whenever Rogers happens to get around to it. It might be years, but you'll be on the list, rest assured. Anyway, if you want to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey there, guys. I love you.
Oh, Mom, how are you?
You're wonderful.
Who's this?
This is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Where are you from, Mary?
Well, right now I'm being held hostage by a 2-year-old in Maryland.
Mm.
But normally I live in Houston and the Rio Grande Valley in Texas.
Oh,
so you move around a lot.
Who is this 2-year-old?
It's safer that way. It's safer that way.
Who's the 2-year-old brat?
Well, he's my grandson, and boy, you hit it right on the head.
I'm sure his parents will be happy to hear that, too.
Well,
they know it.
When it's a 2-year-old, it's almost redundant to say brat.
True.
Yeah, 2-year-olds.
Fellas, I've got a problem that I think you're the only people I can trust to solve.
Yeah, that's sad, but what's the problem?
All right. I've got an 87 Dodge Caravan with a Mitsubishi engine. It was a great car before it was driven through the dealer's wall.
Oh.
That slowed it down a little bit. Since then, I've had problems with the air conditioning. Every time I take it in, it's $600, $900.
Oof.
And the last thing they said to me, just wait till the timing chain goes. Now, I know one of you's got a Dodge Dart, right?
You're right. The one of us has a Dodge Dart. That's me. But better than that, my brother has a Dodge Caravan.
As a matter
and
of fact,
even better than that, he had this very caravan that
what
you
did
own.
You think about it?
What did I think about it?
Yeah.
I got rid of it just before the timing chain went.
Is that tomorrow?
Well, it depends.
How many miles
you
on
must
it?
Have 90,000.
I've got 72,000.
That's what I said. You must have about 70,000. Must be a bad connection we have.
You said and, 90, I heard.
Oh, I did?
I heard him, too.
I didn't mean to. Oh, that was Celsius, though. You have 70,000 miles on it, and the timing chain is going to go. But you'll get a warning sign.
What will it be?
Grrr.
How much before it completely stops?
About an hour.
No, you'll have plenty of warning. It will gradually start to make this sort of grinding, buzzing sound as you when the engine's running.
Yeah.
You know what? That's funny. We've discovered that what happens on these is the timing chain doesn't ever break. We've done many of these in our shop, and what it has two chains. It has one that runs the camshaft, that's the big timing chain.
All right.
Then it has another chain which runs this this thing called a counterbalance shaft.
All right.
And neither of these chains, I've never seen either one of them break, but what happens is one of the guides, they make these things out of aluminum or something very brittle.
Okay.
And one of the guides that's supposed to keep the chain from flapping around actually breaks and falls down inside and gets ground up by the chain. So what you hear...
Hurts.
It's like having a baseball card or two in the spokes of your bicycle. You get that drrrr sound.
Got it.
And what you're hearing is the chain grinding up that tensioner.
Oh, that's
now,
wonderful. I look forward to that.
If you're not faint of heart and you can take it, you could probably drive it another 20,000 miles like that.
But look, I drive every weekend from Houston to the Valley, through the King Ranch, barren, no filling stations, nothing. I'm not sure it's safe to continue to drive it.
What valley?
The Rio Grande Valley in Texas.
I thought all of Texas was a valley.
Well, it is. It
you mean there's
is.
A place that's lower than the rest? No kidding.
Well, no, it's just down right on the Mexican border.
I gotcha.
Where we have citrus, we call it the valley.
Yeah, that's a lot of miles.
Tell me about it. And now I've got to listen for the timing chain to get chewed up.
Oh, so your concern is if you start to hear the noise on your way down.
Yeah, am I going to get...
Would you make it down and would you make it back?
Yes.
The answer is absolutely. So don't worry.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you haven't even started hearing any noises...
Well, I hear noises, but I haven't recognized them as this chewing noise.
No.
I'll start listening tomorrow.
I'll tell you that. No, don't start listening. You'll hear it when it happens.
Okay.
Sure. Don't go out of your way to listen for it. But I'll tell you, I got rid of our caravan when it had about 85,000 miles on it or some such thing.
Okay.
And I didn't have the heart to sell it, so I gave it to somebody.
Right.
Expecting the timing chain to go any day. To make a long story short, It has well over 100,000 on it. It still has the same timing chain.
Oh.
So they don't all go.
Okay.
So when it goes, you'll know it. And if it doesn't go, the best protection you can have is to change your oil a lot.
I do that every 2,500 miles.
You're all set.
You're all set. Don't worry. It'll last at least to 75,000.
Hey, thanks a million.
Pleasure talking to you.
I think thank you.
And give that little brat a dope slap.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
My name is Adeep Jagarajan.
Adeep?
Yes.
A-D-I-P?
No. That's A-J-I-T, and I'm sure you can't spell my last name.
Give us the pronunciation of the last name.
It's Adeep Jagarajan.
Tyagarajan.
Tyagarajan, that's right.
Tyagarajan, I like it.
Uh-huh.
Are you Indian?
Yes, that's right. I'm originally from Madras, India, and I'm studying at the University of Delaware, and right now I'm in California.
Good.
Okay, now we have a full biographical sketch here.
Okay, Ajeep, what's up?
Oh, there's a weird problem in my uncle's car. See, I've been going around in this place in my uncle's car, and it's a 1989 Honda Civic Wagovan. And there's a weird connection between the car's interior fan, the one that's inside the car where it blows air at you, and the idle speed of the engine. Now, if you turn the fan off completely, the engine's RPM goes down to like 200 or 100. And if you're at a traffic light, it can sometimes stall. And I've tried to experiment with this a little bit, and then I found that this is connected with the lights also. If I turn the lights on,
the RPM goes up.
Then right, the RPM goes on, so that's why I don't find this problem in the night. And it's there in the daytime. I have to keep the fan on to this very low speed. And I also experimented with the wipers, and the wipers don't seem to affect this problem, though.
No, there are several things that actuate the idle up solenoid. The engine is designed to run at low RPM to conserve fuel.
Right.
Except that the engine is so small. Using any electrical device puts such a big load on the engine to make the alternator make this electricity for this electrical device
that it slows the car down.
Right, to such an extent that it may even cause the engine to stall. So they have, attached to several devices, a switch that when you turn, for example, the headlights on, it sends a signal to the carburetor or the throttle of the fuel injection and boosts the idle speed. So when you turn the headlights on, which would ordinarily make the idle speed go down, the idle speed actually goes up to compensate for the headlights being on. Similarly, if you turn on the fan when you turn on the air conditioner, the same thing happens. The idle speed will go up. Now, the reason it's down so low ordinarily is that what's called the curb idle speed is adjusted incorrectly. So
there isn't something wrong with the idle up solenoid. That is working. What's wrong is that the car is not tuned up properly.
Huh.
So what you need to do is have someone jack up the idle, as we say in the trade. Turn it up.
Uh-huh. But now, if at night, then don't you think that the idle speed is going to be way high because the headlights are also on then?
How fast is it running when the lights are on?
When the lights are on, it typically goes up to about 500 or 600.
Yeah,
and
see,
and it stays stable there.
That's not enough.
That's even too low for no lights on.
Yeah, I think the correct idle speed for this thing is probably 700 or 800, actually. That's what the curb idle speed is, and then it'll tell you what the idle boost speed is. Uh-huh. But there are ways to adjust that. I don't know exactly how to adjust it on this thing, but we have our book that we have the book.
Yeah.
And it tells you which screw to turn.
So this is a simple problem. This is a simple problem, Ajit.
Trivial.
Aha, uh-huh. So it's something that I can do myself, then.
Yeah, if you can find the right screw, yes.
Open the hood.
Uh-huh. Oh. I've tried that, and it looks too compact. There's no space to move around in this car.
That's why we make the big bucks, man. Yeah, in fact, the more intimidating it looks under there, the more people are willing to pay because they figure that you have mastered something. You have you justify that high price by the fact that you understand this.
Yeah, and in fact, the Japanese taught American manufacturers this trick. Because American manufacturers used to put everything where you could see it, touch it, the screws were there, you could find them and turn them. And the Japanese taught us, hide everything, make everything look as complex as possible, and no one we'll mess with it.
Well, the problem is that the Americans didn't learn the entire lesson.
No.
The Japanese make it look very complicated, although Japanese cars, by and large, are very easy to service because everything is well-engineered and laid out so that you can get at everything surprisingly easily, even though it looks like a mess.
Mm.
The Americans, on the other hand, must have taken some lessons from the French. Because they put stuff in there, and then you can't figure out how to get it off easily, and it's a nightmare. Because they just jammed it all in, and they say, well, if you can get it out, that's good for you. But try it yourself. You can't make it much worse than it is. And if you turn the wrong screws, you'll know it, because when you turn the headlights on, the idle won't go up, or it'll go up too high, and then you'll know what you did wrong.
Well, good luck with your Uncle Civic.
Thank you very much.
All right. Don't forget,
talking to you guys.
Turn any screw you see into there. Don't worry about it. It's not your car.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There's more coming up right after the following messages. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to try to answer your questions about cars, car repair, and geography.
Hey, just to show you how bad the situation is regarding mail, I want you to see what I'm reduced to.
This from the Weekly World News or what?
Do you know what is, where is the geographic center?
Yes, of the country?
Of the United States.
Yes, I happen
just
to...
Just the contiguous 50 states. Yeah.
The contiguous 48. That there were 48.
48. 48.
They had the
there are 48, yeah.
I would have to guess.
Yeah.
The geographical center. Geographical center? Not weighted. Not. This is not the demographic. This is
what do they call it? The moment.
The
gravitational moment about which the entire country pivots. If you balance the country on this...
Balance what? Weight-wise?
No. The center.
The center.
Weight not involved, so of course. We don't want to weigh every state. We just want to know, where is the geographic center? Where do you think?
Trenton, New Jersey. Give me a hint.
You're
west,
so close. It's Newark.
No, I, wait a minute. Now I haven't given up. Give me my hot or cold.
According to the 1993 World Almanac.
Okay, I'm gonna guess. I'm really gonna guess now.
Yeah.
I'm really gonna guess now. It's gonna be. It's certainly gonna be west of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna be like. Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Okay.
It is at 39 degrees, 50 minutes north latitude.
Okay, I happen to know where that is.
And 98 degrees, 35 minutes west longitude.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Which puts it in Smith County, Kansas. The closest town being Lebanon, Kansas.
Gee, I was close. I mean, I was...
I always had thought... that there was a town called Centralia, Kansas, because it was, in fact, a geographic center.
Gee, that would be, if there isn't, if there ought to be
there
one
ought,
right at that precise
I mean, where,
location.
I was a little confused to have read this. Where is Central? I'm going to have to check it out.
Well,
Maybe someone is listening and knows where
they should call it Central America. Anyway, I wanted to mention that this is normally the time when I introduce the new puzzler, but the puzzler happens to be on what? Vacation.
Look, don't get me started.
Oh, relax. I know you're angry because we came out here to the island of Martha's Vineyard to catch a glimpse of the vacationing Clinton.
You know how much I wanted to see the guy.
We couldn't get a room. The puzzler, as luck would have it, also happens to be vacationing here, and the puzzler has a room, but wouldn't share it with us because of my brother's snoring. Boy, you are bad. You sound like a beached walrus.
So anyway, talking about beaches. I never hear it.
We're going to stay out here on the beach until we can find room on the ferry back to the mainland. But don't worry, Tommy. I'm sure by the time the puzzler returns, you'll be ready to forgive and forget.
Jeez, these mosquitoes. I doubt it.
Oh, come on. Don't be a crybaby. Here, hit that one with a rock. In the meantime, if you have a puzzler that you think we can use, please send it to us at Puzzler Tower, Potentially Usable Puzzler Division, otherwise known as PUPD, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
MA02238. And if we use your puzzler and you happen to be listening in that show, and you really want one, we'll send you a baseball hat or a T-shirt or
some other piece of junk that's cluttering up the office.
In the meantime, if you'd like to talk to us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Al Vacovius. I live in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Hi, Al.
What's
Hi.
Your last name? Vacovius?
Vacovius.
What a great
name. We weren't supposed to use last names in the show. We don't even use our last names.
We don't. What nationality, what ethnicity is that?
It's a Mesopotamian name.
I knew. Woof. That is a great, Vacovius.
Gee, that's a great name.
Yeah, so, Al.
I have a, I took a vacation with my family this summer in Colorado and had an unnerving experience, and it's baffled me ever since. I've asked several people about it, and they've given me strange answers, that none of which I really believed, and so this was esoteric enough that I felt it would be perfect for you.
We're ready.
Okay. I have an 86 Ford van, 350 van, with a 6.9 diesel and a aftermarket turbo on it, which is irrelevant for this conversation. But I went up to Colorado. We're about 200 feet mean sea level here in Shreveport. So I headed to Colorado. By the time I got to Denver, I was at 5,000. And then we stayed at Peaceful Valley for a couple of days at 8,000 feet. And then finally went up to Estes Park, which is about 7,000. And then we took a trip up into Rocky Mountain National Park, which is at 12,700 all the way at the top.
I got it. So far, I have 40,000 feet. I'm adding them all up. So
okay, so yeah, there you are, at twice the height of Mount Everest. Okay, we got that so far.
Okay, I'm at 12,700 feet up at this visitor center at Rocky Mountain.
I have been there with the frozen tundra behind it.
Yeah, right. Isn't it beautiful?
It is.
On the way down, I'm traveling down in this 4-ton vehicle that I have and the whole family, and we're looking out at the mountains and everybody's happy and, oh, look there. And suddenly I reach for the brake pedal and it's no longer there. It goes all the way to the floor.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I back it off a couple times and I say, oh, my gosh, what a time to run out of brake fluid. So I back it off a couple times and pump it and I got pedal. Okay, so I said, oh, well, you know, wonder what that was. I go along a little farther.
What, you just said, well, I wonder what that was? You didn't pull over immediately to, like, check to see if you had fluid?
No, I didn't do it.
No, I figured he survived 20, this.
I was only going about 20 miles an hour, and there wasn't much of a grade, and I had pedal again, and so I let it off, and a little while later, I tried again, and wham, to the floor.
Okay, let's back up a minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
What had you been doing just before you lost pedal?
I didn't have my foot on the brake.
You didn't. In other words, you were going down in a lower gear, descending from the visitor center.
Right.
On that windy road.
Right, on that windy road.
Which everyone uses their brakes on, but you didn't.
This is important now.
Okay, I'm
hesitating.
Relatively sure.
The jury should note that the witness is hesitating.
Yeah.
Stop badgering the witness.
I'm guessing I wasn't using them very often. Well, maybe.
You had been parked, however, prior to this.
Yes, for about an hour.
And how long did you drive before you stepped on the brake and lost the pedal? How long had you been driving?
10 minutes.
Ten minutes. Well, hardly enough time to have lost the brakes in the manner that my brother is about to describe.
I agree. Problem. I absolutely agree. Had nothing to do with it.
Okay, now, here's the rest of the story. So every once in a while I reach for the pedal and there's nothing there, and I pump it up and I've got brakes and I slow it down and do that again and again. We get down to Estes Park, which is to flat ground, which is at 7,000, and I pull over and I stop and I say, I'm going to go out and check my cylinder. But suddenly I realize that I've got my full pedal again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've got brakes.
Yeah.
I say, and from that point on, it hasn't bothered me again. I don't have that problem. So something dropping from 12.
I got it too. You got the same thing that I got.
No,
you?
I'm having something, a little gas, I think. I don't know what you have. But
no, you're going to tell me I need a physicist, right?
No. Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Yes. When you were at 12,000 feet.
It was cold, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, it was cold.
And you bet.
And since then, and before that, it hadn't been cold.
That's right.
Because it's what? Summertime.
Right. As you know, when things get cold, they shrink.
So when you were stopped at the visitor center, the seals in your master cylinder had shrunk enough to cause the brake master cylinder to fail, which is often what happens in the wintertime. You don't have winter in Shreveport.
So you wouldn't know about
this. But in the great frozen north where we live, people often have master cylinders and their brakes fail in the wintertime. to such an extent that the brakes will not work when the car is cold. But after, if you're brave enough to drive it and the temperature under the hood increases because of the heat given off by the engine, the brakes will begin to work again.
When the master cylinder is bad, and the way it gets bad is the little seal, which is a little rubber ring, wears out. And so when you step on the pedal and want to push the fluid, it sneaks by the seal. And as long as it's hot out, that little rubber seal has expanded. Even though it wore out, it expands enough to make the thing work. However, as soon as you get the first cold day, all the master cylinder seals which have been wearing out for the previous 6 months suddenly shrink up, and the master cylinder suddenly doesn't work anymore.
And because I wasn't using any power, I wasn't generating any heat.
Exactly.
Golly, you guys are smart.
Actually, this is good news, because it means that your master cylinder is not in tip-top shape. And you would never know that living in Shreveport.
So you need to replace it.
So it needs to be replaced.
Because sooner or later, even though it's warm in Shreveport, it's going to fail.
So it's not just seals on it that I can replace?
No, you need to replace the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah, buy a new one. It's $100+.
Right.
It may save your life. And you were lucky you didn't die up there.
You were very lucky that this happened, or you would never have known. And the fact that it now works is... Man.
I mean, weren't you worried?
You Mesopotamians, you live a charmed life, you know?
I mean, weren't you worried driving down the rest of that drive?
Of course I was worried.
Man, these are Mesopotamians.
So I let my wife take the wheel, and I went back and took a nap.
You drive, hon, I'll walk. I want to hike down. What a guy.
I feel like getting a little exercise. No, seriously, Al, have the master cylinder replaced, because it's no good.
Well, I really appreciate that.
Well, we certainly hope so. Thanks for your call, Al.
Yeah,
if you want to put a little something in your will about us, go right ahead. We did save your life.
As a matter of fact, if you are going to put something in your will about us, don't change
the master cylinder. Don't fix the master
cylinder. See you later.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, one more hour of your summer has been wasted listening to Car Talk, and a short summer it is indeed.
It sure is now.
Our vacationing producer is Doug Berman. Our associate producer and dean of the College of Automusicology is Ken Binoculars. What binoculars? Rogers. Our engineer and assistant producer is Jennifer Jiffy Loeb. Our technical advisor is the old man himself.
Yeah, the old man on the mountain.
Bugsy, Sebastian, Mr. Height, Sweet Cheeks, Free Lunch, Donut, Breath, Lawler. Did I leave any out? Should I repeat them again in case I didn't know? Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. Our secretary of pain relief is Les Aspirin. Our staff psychologist is Les Moody. The head of buildings and grounds is Mo DeLon. Our staff geneticist is Dr. Gene Poole. Our director of long-range strategic planning is Kay Sarah, who, of course, is married to Frank Sarah, and now her driver's license says Kay Sarah Sarah. The chairman of our math department is Horatio Algebra. Mr. Gigi does our hair. And, of course, our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known behind the bars as Huey Louie Dewey. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And although Bob Edwards keeps saying, "Are you sure those guys work for us?" This is NPR, National Public Radio.